Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 546, The Gentleman. Yeah! Welcome back, Guy Ritchie.
I mean, I don't really want to tackle the gentlemen because they're so proper.
No, I will.
And...
I will.
Okay.
Well. Yeah, too proper.
All right. Oh, too proper for your life.
Take,
okay.
Take it down a notch.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is...
Well, we have to go around the table.
I pulled the
He's excited. He's like, I haven't reviewed a movie.
Out, man.
I haven't done this in, you know... Two,
yeah. Jonesing for a movie review.
Let's talk about it.
So let's go around the table and introduce ourselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts where you can go rate, review, subscribe. And you should subscribe so you never miss an episode. And, of course, check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, join the group and like the page. And, of course, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month you get all sorts of bonus content and the joy of helping out.
And an angel gets its wing every time you subscribe.
Sure. Boom. So there.
That's the sound it makes.
There's all that. Now for the gentleman.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously Guy Ritchie kind of made a name for himself and made a name for himself.
It was his
Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels and Snatch and Rock and Rolla, and there was one with Jason Statham that was post Swept Away that we don't really it never gets mentioned. It was fine.
It's Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, Snatch, Rock and Roll is fun. I don't think it's on the level of the other two. Okay.
It's fun though.
But and then it was like, okay, so he went and did Sherlock, which still had that, you know, that British street crime kind of thing. Like, he's a perfect director to take that on. Like, his style and his, you know, but
Aladdin should have worked.
I don't know.
I do. It should everything didn't lean into his strength. That was the problem.
Exactly.
You have a quick talking streetwise kid.
I get what they're going for, but yeah, it does not work.
No.
But those two, really, those first two, I mean, those set up the tone and his style and everything. And again, Sherlock leaned into that and it worked really well. But we've got a lot of movies like that King Arthur movie.
Yeah.
You know, Aladdin was a fail.
The Robin Hood one looks like it's a Guy Ritchie movie, it's
not Guy Ritchie, but someone tried to be Guy Ritchie.
Yeah.
I guess we can't fault him for that one.
No.
But he did that Man from U.N.C.L.E., which was fun.
That was fun. Yeah.
And that didn't really, I mean, because it's about espionage, I guess there's still some like fast talking, you know, whatever to it. But
double crosses and triple crosses.
Yeah, that worked
like that,
really
well.
But yeah, Guy Ritchie, I've been personally waiting for him to return to the genre. I mean, this Snatch was one of my favorite movies.
Growing up
in high school, watched that over and over again. It's so great. And I've been waiting for him. Like, let's make another down and dirty street level thriller, you know, and it's like, where have these movies been?
Right.
And I'll tell you what, this movie was exactly what I was looking for.
I totally agree.
I loved this movie. I'm not saying it's perfect, but I loved it. I had such a great time. With the characters, the stylistic, it's very stylized. Like, Snatch was a very stylized movie. I love the way that he's taken everything he's learned and, like, upped his game with the stylistic stuff. It's a, you know, fast talking, fast moving, cutting back and forth. It had everything that I wanted in a Guy Ritchie movie.
Yeah, this is a return to Tom is roll. I've never seen eyes roll harder.
I think what it comes down to, I don't like Guy Ritchie movies.
Well, then this dude has never made a movie I've enjoyed.
Okay, well then that obviously.
That Man from U.N.C.L.E. was okay.
Yeah.
I don't,
but think, you don't like, do you think that's based on Cavill and Hammer?
I don't know. I mean, Man from U.N.C.L.E. was okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
But other than that.
But if you don't like Lock, Stock, and Snatch, like this movie is in that genre.
That is a pretty. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, I think if you like those movies, then there's probably enough here for you to
this
like.
This is
but
a return
for, but
to
for
form.
Me, I just. And also, it felt like Guy Ritchie doing a Guy Ritchie impersonation.
Interesting.
But. What do I know? Because I didn't like the original, so why would I like the impersonation?
That's fair. I think if you're not a Guy Ritchie fan, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know? So is this a remake?
No.
The original. You mean his original
movies?
No,
I mean, I'm saying, like, I feel like this is Guy Ritchie doing a Guy Ritchie impersonation.
Right.
So if
but
you didn't
you
like the original Guy Ritchie,
okay.
You're not going to like
it.
The
okay.
impersonation.
I just wanted to make sure there wasn't something
it's a copy
that we
of
were
a copy.
Missing.
Guy Ritchie is Tarantino is to Letterman as Guy Ritchie is to Jay Leno.
Ooh, yeah.
That's an interesting comparison.
He tries too hard.
Okay.
I don't like to
look
me.
Look how edgy and crazy I am. It's all going out of control.
But I.
What's going to happen next?
I don't know. Like,
don't care.
That's funny.
Oh, and also, I'll say it in accents that nobody can effing understand.
I got to put subtitles
I'm
on
sure,
my movie.
Sure, the people that grew up in that. 3-square-block radius of Manchester are really digging this.
I had a perfectly fine time understanding them.
This one was easier than
Brad Pitt and Snatch.
Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. I didn't understand
oh, really?
A goddamn word
oh,
in
I,
the
that was
whole
bad.
Movie.
But the Pikey stuff, don't they even put subtitles on there? Like,
yeah.
But, you know, that's... Yeah, I don't know. I really like his style, and I like those gritty crime
lots of people do.
Mobster stuff.
I'm the odd man out.
Yeah,
put it in a trilogy with those first two. I mean, this was, if you're a fan of those, and Rock and Roll, even if you like that one, I think that you're going to get exactly what you want out of this. I thought the cast was good. I thought
Rock and Roll was on sale on Vudu the other day for like $5.
So it's worth a
and
watch.
And I almost bought it because I was like, oh, I've heard so many good things.
Oh, you saw
and
that
then I was like, oh, directed by Guy Ritchie. Moving right along. Like, yeah. I've seen enough of his movies to know.
That one, actually, to that one's credit, it does have Gerard Butler before, like...
This is the one that got him noticed.
Yes, yeah. And then it has Idris Elba and Tom Hardy. It's got that Toby Kibler, isn't it? This is what made me, like, dig that guy.
Yeah.
But, like, so that cast is different than the previous ones, and
right.
It's got a really good... It's a very young Tom Hardy.
See, I always liked Smoke and Aces.
He was just coming off of My So-Called Life.
It was, yeah, right. Yeah.
I liked Smoke and Aces more, and I felt like Rock and Roller was trying to be in the vein.
I think they came out at the same time.
Right, but that's what I mean. There was Smoke and Aces, directed by Joe Carnahan, which I absolutely love.
Good. So good.
And it's in the same kind of like storytelling, cutting back and forth with characters, happening at the same time.
Yeah.
It is like a Guy Ritchie movie, and then Rock and Roller came out, and I always preferred Smoke and Aces, and I think that's why I don't put... Rock and Roll on the same level
because
I'm like, oh, it's not Smoking Aces, but it's still a fun movie. I would prefer the other.
I think I like the cast of Rock and Roll better.
Really?
I do.
Have you watched Smoking Aces lately and seen how stacked that cast is?
Oh no, I mean it's Affleck and Ray Liotta and Ryan Reynolds and
Taraji P. Henson, Alicia Keys,
or Jeremy Piven. I just had
Jeremy
a stroke
Piven.
When I said Jerami.
Yep. Who's the guy from Warrior?
Tom Hardy.
No, the other one, the
Joel,
brother.
Joel Kinnaman? No, that's not right.
No, yeah. I always say Joel Kinnaman, too.
It's not Joel Kinnaman.
Start with an O. God, I'm
he
blanking.
Was the, yeah, he's yeah. the guy from Bright.
Yeah, we know who, I mean, we all know who this guy is.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, so.
Joel Osteen? No.
It's not okay. Joel Osteen. But yeah, it's Joel Edgerton.
Joel Edgerton.
Sorry, I always forget, but yeah, Joel Edgerton. I mean,
who is he in that?
Isn't he in It Comes at Night?
Yeah, he directed that.
Did he direct that one?
I think
okay.
So.
He writes with his brother. He's a writer, too. So anyway, I always want to say Kinnaman, though. For some reason, that one always comes up first.
Who is he in Smoking Aces? Chris Pine's in
it. He plays a Russian guy.
Oh, he does. You're right. Wait.
Yeah, he
the
plays
guy with
Russian.
The guy with the masks?
Well, that guy takes... He plays that
yes.
character.
Okay.
Plays two characters, but
that's
yes.
Chris Pine as well.
Chris Pine is in it. yeah, it's crazy. I mean, if you think about all those names we just listed, all in that one movie.
Yeah.
So you didn't know who they were back then, but now when you watch it...
That's true.
That cast is crazy.
Oh, she is in that. That's right. And who's the other gal that's with
Taraji P. Henson
and somebody
Alicia
else.
Keys.
Alicia Keys, yeah.
Like,
and Common.
Common's in it. Yeah, I mean, you can go on and on. When I watched that movie again, I was like, holy crap. I already liked it, but I'm like, these people, I all know them. I didn't know who Chris Pine was back then.
You probably wouldn't recognize him in this movie anyway.
Well, and he's he looks like a Mad Max style
crazy,
you know, and whatever. So anyway, Ritchie has made a name for those movies, and he's kind of gotten away from it. A lot of people think it's because of his, was it a cinematographer?
Matthew Vaughn.
Was,
yeah.
Matthew,
I think it's DP. I think you're right. Yes. Yeah.
So Matthew Vaughn then, of course, went on to do Kick-Ass, and was he a Kingsman? Well,
he did Stardust. He did X-Men First Class. Mm. He did the first Kingsman.
Yeah.
He actually may have done the second one.
I think he did both.
Yeah.
I thought he did.
And then he did Kick-Ass, and so he was doing some big budget.
Yeah, he's done the big budget action type of movies, and once he left and did his own thing, Guy Ritchie's movies seemed, you know, coincidence or not, but it seemed like the quality kind of fell off.
Well, he went into the studio system.
Yeah.
Like, he started doing the Sherlock movies, and then he did Aladdin, and then he did
King Arthur, these original crime thrillers, and he was kind of more of a director for hire.
Right.
And,
which is fine. Like, if that's, you know, if you don't have anything to... I guess I feel
if
like
you're really good at it. Yeah, I guess I just feel like he made a name with those other movies.
He
it's
did.
Like people, I wanted to see freaking Snatch style, right?
Yeah.
And so fast forward to 2019 in the UK, The Gentlemen, it's like, this is that type of movie.
Yes.
This is, but you know, it's interesting. So, you know, they're always doing some kind of crime hustle type thing. And this one all revolves around weed.
Which, yeah.
And I thought it was a really interesting premise. The fact that they even addressed that, like,
it's going to be legal
in
10 years.
In the UK, weed is not legal. In the States, it's a different story. But they're like, it's going to be eventually.
Right.
And what will that do to the economy of it? And so they address all these things. But we've never really... They don't usually follow a gangster movie. Like, I know we've seen some stuff like American Made or, like, you know, there's stuff
you mean
that...
American Hustle?
No, it was American Made when he smuggles drugs and weed across the...
Yeah. Who was that?
Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise
The pilot
in the plane.
Yeah.
But you don't ever really see like a gangster movie, right? Like a hardcore like crime movie. They don't usually revolve around weed. Blow is, you know, cocaine.
Yeah.
And they're usually a little bit more... You know, you don't think of weed, but I thought it was really interesting that this whole criminal enterprise revolves around a weed dealer.
Right. And I think you're going to see way more movies revolve around weed dealers.
I think...
because it's a way to make your crime movie...
Not a crime movie?
Not a crime movie, mm-hmm. and make your criminal... Like, right, when you look at, like, we've romanticized bootleggers, right?
Yeah, sure.
And I think weed stories will become the new bootleggers.
I feel...
Absolutely.
I
should
feel
be
like,
that was illegal at one point.
Well, not even that, but, like... Weed isn't doing the damage that heroin or meth or that does, and they address that in this movie too, where when you're a weed dealer,
like people aren't going to be like, oh, that terrible, horrible person. It's like
right, but you're not pumping death into your customers' arms.
It's a way to keep your criminals still likable,
right?
Exactly.
And this is I think this cast. This is one of the first times I didn't find Charlie Hunnam completely irritating.
He's been in a few good ones. He really has. He was in that Lost City of Z, which also had Robert Pattinson.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He was in, I liked that Papillon, which is a remake. That was Rami Malek and him.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I liked him in this. I'm not a huge fan of him.
He sucks. Normally he sucks. Like, I don't get the Jax thing. I don't get the anything else that has
he's
to do with Charlie
He's kind of a Scott
Hunnam.
In the Scott Eastwood category of like, yeah, he's a good-looking dude, but like kind of a little robotic, little wooden.
Very, very much so.
But no, he's good in this.
He's good in this.
I really like this. I will tell you what, though. Hugh Grant, MVP.
Easily.
Hugh Grant is amazing.
Yeah.
I've never seen Hugh Grant play a character like this.
Yeah.
And I'm asking myself why he has never played a character. Guy Ritchie wrote him a character.
Because he looks like Hugh Grant.
Because he looks like Hugh Grant.
Yeah, but,
he fell into that romantic, dopey lead.
But God, put some sunglasses and a goatee on him, and like the way he talks is so, you know, Hugh Grant usually doesn't speak in that. I don't know what you would call that rougher cock. I don't know if it's cock.
It's,
I don't know.
It's quite cock, but it's
that, like, you know, so he doesn't usually speak like that. He's more polished. And I just, Guy Ritchie wrote him a role he could sink his teeth into.
Yeah.
And oh my God, do I want more? Like, that character is hilarious. I want to see him in roles like this. He's great.
I mean, you're not going to see him for any more roles
please,
of this
Hugh
character.
Grant play like fast talking mobster style. Like,
I don't even think mobster, just be like the scummy.
Oh, whatever. Yeah. But he could play him. Like, I know that he's a reporter in this, but it still isn't that role of like, hey, I've got all this info and I'm going to blackmail you or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, give him like a crime boss type even role. Like, he really worked.
This is the Colin Farrell I love.
Colin Farrell
for me was the MVP.
Yes.
He was great.
He was funny. Yeah,
Colin Farrell was more of the, what was the movie? Seven Psychopaths?
Yep. Yeah, I'll give you that one. That's
like,
a great flick.
In Bruges?
Yeah.
Same director. Who's the guy that directed those?
I don't know.
Somewhere I have a promo item from Seven Psychopaths.
Do you?
Yeah, dog.
They sent me the cardboard dog crap. Oh, bullets.
Nice. I have it too. That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Seven Psychopaths.
He's your
loved.
Penguin, apparently?
He is. Yeah.
Weird.
I don't know. But yeah, I really, really enjoyed.
So do you think that means Jonah Hill wasn't going to be the Penguin?
That's what
I don't know.
I don't know.
Because they went so different body type. Like Jonah Hill, when you say.
No offense to Jonah Hill.
Like when but, you,
no,
when
he was
you,
supposed to be Riddler.
That's right. Okay, that's
not
right.
Penguin.
Yeah, it's first
that's
everybody,
too on the nose. You're
right.
Thinking, oh, like fat.
Right, right, right. That's, and so when they went, would they go with a totally different body?
Yeah, you're just like that's Colin Farrell. All right, yeah, that's fine.
I'm excited because I mean, if you watch Gotham, which I know you fell off on that one,
yeah,
which
it's a crap show.
No, after season one, I'm telling you, it gets good. But you know, the Penguin, Robin Lord Wright,
yeah.
He was a skinny, and he's much younger in that. But he went with the non-traditional Penguin body.
You
type.
Mean? Oh, I was like, everything about that show was non-traditional.
I liked it. I really liked it. But anyway, so the characters, yeah, everyone was on their A game. In this.
Everybody
the,
was, yeah.
You know, it's got a great cast, and I feel like everyone was firing on all cylinders. So Matthew McConaughey, I liked him in this role as well.
Yeah.
I miss this kind of Matthew McConaughey.
We jokingly said that the beginning of this movie was, are we watching a Lincoln ad? Like, is that what we're doing right now? But Spath and I saw it yesterday,
okay.
Or Friday, and he said, do you remember what we were watching this time last year? And I said,
what was that?
No. He said, that stupid game movie with McConaughey.
Was that January?
Yeah.
Oh, that was so
yeah,
stupid.
Yeah, that was the catching, like the kid made, remember the kid made the game?
Yes.
And like put the title,
yeah.
copy
movie,
of his dad
title
or whatever.
The movie, the whale was called Justice,
Justice.
Or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ugh. Yeah,
so bad. So it was this, I think How Did This Get Made did an episode on
they
that.
Should,
like
they
that.
Did because it was
yes,
bad. It was worthy of that.
So
yeah,
like Anne Hathaway and Diane Lane.
Yeah,
yeah,
oh. yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, I really liked McConaughey in this. I like it when McConaughey plays a character that's like a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah,
right. Like because he plays this mobster that's kind of made good. Like he wants to get out of the game. He grew up doing. Like, you know, small time
hustle. He came up a hustler.
Yeah. But he started getting into crime and his hands had blood on them and he starts getting more and more and more into this life. And so, but now he's trying to clean up his act, but you can tell like
I'm not so sure he's trying to clean up his act as much as he's like, I want to be done.
Well, that's what I mean. Like,
well,
he doesn't want to do crime anymore.
Like, once it becomes legal, he has too much of a criminal record. They'll never let him.
And that's
him.
What he says.
Yeah.
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 He does say that. He's like, yeah. When he starts to sell. Trying to sell his whole operation to the Matthew character. Mm. He's basically saying, Matthew kind of questions him. He's like, why are you trying to get out? And he was like, look, man, I've done some stuff. You are this clean, spick and clean. Like, you don't have any stigma around you. Nobody knows what you're up to. I, on the other hand, everybody knows what I've been up to. It's no secret.
They'll never stop looking at him under a microscope. If he even if it becomes legal, they'll be on his ass trying to bust him for something.
Right, exactly.
It won't work. But so he's like, you know, also like retirement sounds good. So the movie starts out kind of with that bait and switch or like a head fake kind of a thing, which I think was pretty obvious.
I didn't though. Like
did
I
you
was
think maybe
I,
it was.
I thought maybe. Like I thought it's like we're gonna get the story to
okay.
like the end of the movie is gonna be
as soon as they don't show it.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh well, clearly someone else took out the guy. So what happens is Matthew McConaughey is on the phone. He's got a drink in front of him, and you see a guy with a gun behind him, and then it cuts to the drink, and you see blood splattered on it. But again, as soon as they didn't show him actually dying, I'm like, oh, someone killed the guy behind him.
Right.
It's going
to
be, yeah. You know.
And then we flash to Charlie Hunnam kind of getting his stuff in his house, getting his stuff together. And then
Hugh
here
Grant,
comes Hugh Grant
with his drink. He's rattling the ice in the thing.
Yeah, right.
And Charlie Hunnam just turns around slowly like, what the hell are you doing? And he knows this guy. And Hugh Grant plays this reporter type.
He's
private
eye. He's a PI.
Okay. Yeah.
And we find out that Charlie Hunnam was, Matthew McConaughey's like right hand man. Mm-hmm. So he says, he's like, look, I've this newspaper reporter has all wanted me to dig up all of this info on your boss, Mickey.
Just because he snubbed him.
Just because and I thought the snub was great.
Oh, it was
and
fantastic.
The reason behind the snub was even better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like I thought that that's the advantage I think that Guy Ritchie can have in movies like this is he can weave in all of these different little.
I love the backstory.
Two minute clips give you the backstory, and we're back
little
to our
vignettes
main story.
That don't feel out of place that really tell they flash back to this is why the characters are doing what they're doing,
right?
And they go right back to it. But what? So yeah. So and this is the guy from Snatch, right? That's the guy that was
Jason
Statham.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That actor.
Yeah.
So it was really cool.
I don't want to say. Yeah, he's a character actor. You see him all the time. He was on. What was that show with Liev Schreiber?
Is that Eddie Marsden?
I think so. Yeah. The show with Liev Schreiber, where Liev Schreiber was like the
Liev Schreiber,
sorry. Where he has like it's John Voight is his dad, and this guy it's a good show. Like, okay. I remember the first two seasons were really good, but this guy plays like his brother on the show.
Gotcha.
But yeah, so he's a newspaper mogul, but it's like the Daily Star.
Is it like an Inquirer,
which is like
type?
A trash magazine.
Kind
yeah.
Of, yeah.
And what the newspaper guy does is he runs this article. See, that's the problem with this movie. So Matthew McConaughey, to make this operation work, he has all of these lords who have these giant properties.
I thought this was a really clever.
I think it's really clever.
I just like to stylize the way they show the map and show them pop. Like, to me, the stylized fast talking nature of Guy Ritchie's filmmaking, like, it really worked with this movie.
Yeah.
And I thought it was clever the way that they do all this. But anyway, what did the.
So basically, there were all of these higher up, like, lords in Britain.
Oh, when they die, their estate's going to get taxed 50%.
Correct.
So he's like, they're going to need some extra money to take care of things.
So McConaughey uses those properties as weed farms. Yeah. Like, underneath the property, he has all of these weed farms.
No one's looking at lords of the huge, these rich families, and no one's inspecting.
So he's kicking back some of the money to them, but
like
he gets
a million a year.
Yeah, he gets this operation to run. Like, it works out great. So he has all of these lords in his pocket. And he goes to these parties with all of these higher ups. Well, what happens is at one of these parties, we find out that the newspaper guy ran an article on one of the lord's daughters is that she was a druggie and she was a screw. She was like a pop star for a cup of coffee and she had all this
talent.
And
this is the girl that we follow in the movie. Got it.
So we see that, you know, McConaughey's going around shaking hands. He goes, the newspaper guy puts his hand out. McConaughey basically gives him a middle finger in front of everybody.
He refuses to shake his hand.
Elizabeth Warren.
That guy leaves his hand there for a long time.
He does. And I do like the line where the Lord is just like, ooh, that was a big old F you right to your face, huh? And like everybody laughs.
So funny.
So now the newspaper guy is peeved at McConaughey. And he hires Hugh Grant to go dig up all this dirt because he wants to bury him.
And so he hires him for £150,000 probably. And now Hugh Grant has found all this information. And so he basically is telling the story to Charlie Hunnam about everything he's
uncovered. Which I think is a great device.
Yeah.
I like this device a lot.
It's a great exposition device because it really makes sense in this world. Like, he's woven in all this backstory to support him digging it up. And now he's trying to sell it back to him saying, well, I know all this. But it can help you.
And while he's telling Charlie Hunnam what he knows, we're getting the story as viewers.
And I just love the Hugh Grant character. He's like, come sit. And then he's like, do you want to play? Let's play a game. He's like, I don't want to play a game.
Just tell me what you know.
He's like, come on.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so funny the way that he always is. And Charlie Hunnam kind of plays along. And we know that he's got some cards up his sleeve.
Correct.
But not at this point. And so he tells him this whole story about everything he knows. And we're watching it unfurl, and it's really fascinating. The world that he's built with all the different characters, I thought worked really well.
And it's not, that's the Guy Ritchie thing.
Yeah.
This world building.
Going back and forth
different
to all the mobsters,
and
And so, like, we're introduced to the Matthew character.
Right.
Who is, like you said, he's got his hand in all these criminal enterprises, but he's smart and he doesn't get caught. You know,
right.
He's completely clean. And they also say that Matthew McConaughey is a really intelligent guy too, but
he came up in like the Louisiana Bayou with some hick parents,
but he got a free ride. So he was
Oxford.
Yeah. So
instead of going, and he didn't graduate from Oxford. So instead of going back home, he was like, yeah, I'll just stay here.
Yeah. And he found out that all these rich kids had money for pot.
Right.
So he grew a whole criminal enterprise.
It's funny, all I saw is like, oh, we need a plot device for
why he's American.
Why he doesn't have an accent.
But I was kind of thinking,
but they do that a lot with
accents. But he's
clever.
Been there.
That's a clever device.
I feel like he's been there in England long enough that he probably would have.
He's not Madonna.
I guess that's true. Yeah. Well, we don't talk about Madonna in front of Guy Ritchie.
Yes. Yeah.
Touche.
Maybe
that was a little dig.
But
almost ended his career.
But he does talk in some of the British slang.
He does.
It does drop in and out when he's talking to people. So I really like it. I think that's a clever device to get him over there, but to show like, he's a hustler. He came up with no money and he's trying to make money, and he found out, well, all these people are, these rich kids have the money for pot, and he just grew that over the years now into this huge enterprise. Well, like we said, he wants to get out. And so he's at a Matthew at a dinner party.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they
Matthew
do this like one-upmanship.
Yeah. And which I thought was a great go. Like, what I like about this is sometimes in these movies, I would say like 90% of the time, the people that you want to to root for at some point are going to turn on your hero. And I say hero, but like the guy, the main guy, the
protagonist.
Right. So I expect Charlie Hunnam to be the one behind everything, or then Colin Farrell to be the guy behind it, or even the wife. And and you never get that.
You're waiting for like someone to screw him
the
over.
People that you want to be on his side or are loyal, always on his side, which I appreciate, which is not normal.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Fredo, for Christ's sake, his own brother turned on him, you know? So I appreciate that the wife sticks with him.
Yeah, but he deserved it.
He did deserve it. Wait, who did?
Fredo.
Oh, no, totally. Yeah. Well, no, I mean, Fredo is the one that flipped on Michael.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the one guy you wouldn't think. So I appreciate that Colin Farrell comes in and you're just like, and you're rooting for Colin Farrell. You're like, yeah, this is, I like this character, and he never wavers.
Yeah. There's a lot of really likable characters in this. Yeah. I even like the Hunnam character. I like him. Like, he's, would you call him like consigliere?
That's exactly who he was. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, you've got all these characters.
The Irish or the British version of consigliere.
Yeah. So, you've got all these characters that are basically working around the. What, Mickey Pearson? Is the McConaughey
Not
character.
Mickey Dolan.
Not Mickey Dolan.
Sorry.
With a Z.
Yeah.
Or Mickey Dolan.
It's
true.
Know.
I mean,
it's not Mickey Dolan either.
Yeah. anyway, so yeah, so that's how he made his money. But they're at this dinner party and they're like, oh, thank you, Mickey, for donating, blah, 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 blah. And they're like, oh, and Matthew has donated enough
like
for this whole,
like an extra million
this
or
whole
something.
Wing
yeah.
of something in his name. And they're all cheering. And I think it's a hilarious concept to see the rich one upping each other in ways like that of like donations. Like,
and I do like where McConaughey's like, that's why you're at the head of the table.
It's a dick swinging contest.
That's exactly what it was.
But it's rich people donating money. It's so funny that they're like one-upping each other in that. And so he you know, chooses him as someone because he knows he's a businessman. He's like, I've got an offer for
you. He basically says $400 million and I'll give you everything. Yeah. You can have all the sites. You can have the product. You can have... And Matthew, this Matthew character, who I thought initially was Scoot McNeary, but I was like, no, that can't be right. Like, that's not that guy. That's somebody else. Yeah. Where he said, he's basically like, that's kind of a decent price. He comes at him. Does he come at him with a lower offer?
Well,
or he's saying like, why are you selling it so low?
He keeps trying to, as a businessman, the Matthew character keeps saying, well, you know, it's going to become legal. And he tries to make all these points, but McConaughey
that's right.
The whole storyline of his, no, when it becomes legal, they won't be able to keep up with production. We've got 12 sites ready to roll. We've got the staff. We've got the scientists.
You get all
everything and you get all that. And he said something like they're going to make billions a year. So 400
is a drop in the bucket,
yeah.
Which is interesting when you look at the current political climate and what a certain number 45 has bought recently. He's bought a bunch of like farmland. You think I'm not kidding? Watch what happens. Watch.
Okay.
So he basically says that, yeah, I'm selling it for 400 million, but to you in 10 years, this is $1 billion operation, and you're going to be making money hand over fist because, like you said, people
head start.
Yeah, and people won't be able to keep up, and you will already be ready to go.
Now, I will say in a movie
and it's
like
high
this,
quality stuff.
Like, I thought it was fairly obvious. Like, why are you showing your rival? Like, they always one up each other, and they're both in this crime. Like, I'm like, showing him this is a huge mistake. I mean, I think it was a fairly obvious setup that stuff's going to start going wrong.
Yeah.
Once you show someone your whole operation, he knows where it is. He knows how it works.
But it's also, that's always the problem with something. How do you sell it without showing it to him?
No, that is the exact. But I mean, as far as the real world,
you'd have, I mean, in a legal world.
Sure, right.
You'd have them sign an NDA. Like,
yeah.
You know, but like you know,
totally. I just think for the movie it was like, and it didn't obviously ruin my experience, but I'm like, okay, well, he's telling him this and this will not end well.
And it's interesting when you go back and like think about what's happening as soon as Matthew sees the operation, everything
gets
starts
rated.
Well, not even that, like everything kind of starts falling apart a little bit for McConaughey. Like people, Charles, what's it, the guy from Crazy Rich Asians, Henry Goulding's character.
Well, they call him Dry Eye.
Dry Eye.
Yeah.
Immediately shows up the next day with those car parts.
Right. That.
And he's like, I heard you're trying to get out. Mm. And so like people are already, and you think that people that in this world, the word is spreading that Mickey Pearson's wants out.
Yeah.
But when you see why Dry Eye knows, then you're just like, okay.
But
well,
it all happened after he showed Matthew the operation. That's not coincidence, right? So
no,
like,
I thought
it was fairly obvious, but it also was realistic that that's what would happen, especially if you have people trying to outdo one another and trying to take over each other's and be the best gangster, that, you know, whatever in the area.
Best gangster you can
yeah,
do.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how else, you know, you want to run the operation of an area, and this guy, obviously, they had it out for each other, so I think it was clear that would happen, and it does. So, yeah, you see Dry, which I liked.
He was fun.
I really, okay, also, we haven't even talked about the meta nature of the Hugh Grant screenplay dynamic of the story.
It's crazy.
I love the fact that he's like, you get all this information,
Bush, which I thought was funny.
Yeah, you've got all this information that I found as a PI. I've also written a screenplay.
Yeah,
and so he's telling the story, and a lot of times he'll tell parts from his screenplay that are embellished, as you know, based on a true story would be.
Right.
And so, like, he's like, you know, introduce Dry Eye, the craziest whatever Asian mobster, whatever, and he takes on an Uzi and is shooting it in the air, and Charlie Hunnam's like, that's not Dry Eye, and he's like, fair, but you know, so
when you get to the confrontation between Dry Eye and McConaughey,
yeah,
and
it's hilarious.
You get the one version, and Charlie Hunnam's like, that's not how it happened,
and it was awesome.
All.
It was badass. I loved seeing it. It was that whole like show them what could have happened kind of thing, you know, and the head fake, and they rewind it. But I like Twilight, those movies, not a fan, but when they had the balls in the very last one to like kill everyone.
Oh.
And they were like, oh, that was a vision of what could have happened. And you're like, damn it. But like, this is one of those visions of like how it could have gone down.
Right, right.
But anyway.
I do like that Miramax is also in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it's and Guy Ritchie's in
and
the movie.
Who was Guy Ritchie?
He was that.
He's the director, that he's pitching at the end, isn't he?
No. I thought that was Guy Ritchie.
No. Look up a picture of Guy Ritchie.
That's not Guy Ritchie?
No.
Oh, I thought he put himself in the movie.
No, no, no.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
Guy Ritchie looks like one of the characters from Lock, Stock.
Okay.
Like, he's like a thin, balding, not about balding, but shaved head. Like
Tom and I both thought the same.
No,
thing.
I just assumed it's not Guy Ritchie.
No, you're right. Now that I see a picture of him, there's no way that's
no way.
I haven't seen him in a while, so I just presumed that was Guy Ritchie.
He fell off. That's what Guy Ritchie looks like now. Like
I mean, he's got that Aladdin money, you know?
Just sitting pretty. But no, I did think that was a missed opportunity.
Oh
where,
yeah,
was he just supposed to look like Harvey Weinstein?
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
They didn't do that good of a job.
They did a good enough job that I thought it looked like Harvey. Like
that was my first thought, but then I was like oh, it's probably Guy Ritchie. Like that's the.
But why would
bring that up?
Yeah. Why? But also, why would
it really had Miramax? Well, you know, because the poster in the background had
the Man from Uncle.
The Man from Uncle. That's why I thought it was Guy Ritchie.
It's not.
He was in his office with the guy from Uncle. So that was.
Nope.
That's why I thought it.
Think the same. I could see where you would think that.
Right.
Yes,
if you show a movie
sure.
poster for a movie Guy Ritchie directed.
It's all of Guy Ritchie's movie
and,
posters
in the background
him.
And you're talking to a director.
Did you see the name of the beer?
Yeah. Even the beer is named after him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But yeah. So our story is progressing and we find out that Dry Eye is making a move as well. He steals all these cars and goes to Matthew McConaughey's wife. Owns like an all female.
It's not all female because they
had
that
one
too.
Guy.
They had two that we saw.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. So I thought that too because I thought it was really cool that it was all these women working on the cars.
Yeah.
But then when they go upstairs, he's talking to a mechanic, and in the background there's a guy with dreads.
Oh,
on the
was
floor
there?
Too, so.
Okay.
But I thought the same thing. But it's not.
Okay.
But a lot of women are employed there. Which
yeah.
Is, I really liked that character.
She's
badass.
Great.
She's like a fast talking, like
she's part of this
hardened,
little crew, like
you know,
she's yeah
Cockney accent yeah. businesswoman, and she's badass, like
she
holds her own.
I liked her a lot. Yeah. Cool. But yeah, so she kind of said like Dry Eye comes to her first with a shipment of like car parts and says, take it free of charge, but I would like a sit down with your husband. And she was like, this isn't how this works. Yeah. Like this is kind of above your pay grade, basically. And finally he was like, that's all I ask is you take the parts for free, no charge, just give me a meeting. And she was like, all right, I'll see what I can do.
And so I like it when he does show up to this meeting that's been arranged. Matthew McConaughey is not happy.
None what he is not having this
he
meeting.
He lays
at
down.
All.
He's like, first of all, you never come to my wife's place of
right,
business.
Right.
This that's not how that works.
And he apologizes. Like, and yeah. It's like, okay, he apologizes. And basically he says, I hear you're wanting to get out of the business. We have an offer.
What was he typing?
I like mean,
it was funny. But you never see it, but he's like,
and then
he keeps
when McConaughey says that number was too small,
yeah, you're like, what?
Yeah,
and so he's like, old. He basically says, old man, your time's up. So yeah. Like, you better rethink this. And that's where you get that head fake,
right.
Where he's like, you know,
he takes a gun out and he shoots the fahuk. in the face, and then he goes after Dry Eye, which is the fahuk line.
so funny.
It's, it, the between him, between Colin Farrell and Charlie Hunnam.
It's like F, but with a PH. A PH. So, oh, so.
So it's not as.
Yeah.
Calm the fuck down.
Yeah. Yeah, and just to be clear, we're saying fahook.
Yeah, P-H-U-K. Yeah. Like, that's the way it's called. So that's the way I should say it from now on.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so they, you know, we get this big, like, where he shoots everybody.
If you say fahook and A, then I guess you could get away with it.
He shoots everybody, and then we get a...
It's a badass moment where McConaughey pulls out his gun.
When you come at the lion, you better not miss, things like that.
Let me tell you a story about a dragon. And he basically
which
says,
I thought
like,
was really
the
good.
The dragon tries to take over the lion's territory, blah, blah, blah. And he says something like, and the dragon... Or the lion kills the dragon.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much, I'll let you infer the rest of the story.
Exactly.
I'll let you interpret that.
Yeah. So we get the pause, the rewind, where Charlie Hunnam's like, that's not how that happened. And then we run back, and it is McConaughey giving him the speech and finally basically telling Dry Eye to piss off.
Yeah.
And then their place gets raided.
Yeah.
Like that's, which I thought this scene was hilarious, where these five dudes in like ski masks go into, they find
fight
it
porn.
Yeah, basically. But then I it was so funny where the one guy walks out and he was like, what are you guys doing? He's like,
another
we're here. And he's like, hey Tom.
Yeah.
And like the guy walks in and he's like, what is this?
Ew.
And then like, so just like,
and
it's
I
just
thought
like
these
random
kids were gonna get their butts kicked. Like I did not see it going this way, but we didn't know who these people were yet.
Right.
But yeah, all these punk kids come in these masks and they're all dressed in the same style of outfits.
Right.
And
they've all got GoPros.
They've all got
on their
GoPros.
Heads.
And I really liked it because first of all, I'm like, what the hell is this? And then I go, wait a minute, what time do we live in? And I know what TikTok and YouTube are. I'm like, oh, this
sense.
Is exactly what people would do. And so they make this rap song that is cut in, like the guys are rapping, making a music video with cars, doing flips, and they're fighting, and they've mixed it all together. And I don't know. I just thought I've never seen anything like this in a movie, and I know what the kids watch nowadays, and all, and it's like, wow, this is what they would be doing.
Yeah, it's not radically different than those people that like hunt down child predators online and publicly shame them.
Yeah, I mean, it's this is something it took me a second to get used to it, and then I go, this is something that punk kids would do.
Yeah.
They're like rappers and fighters, and they'd make video. Yeah. So they end up kicking all, like everyone at the grow, what do you call it? A grow operation.
It wasn't a dispensary, but it was like the whole
the underground.
Yes.
Like the hidden one.
They steal a bunch of weed. They kick. This is the part where I was like, this is where he's missing Matthew Vaughn.
Yeah.
Like this was not, I know that you brought up the jump cuts on Bad Boys. This was hard to watch.
Really?
Like it is. Yeah, it's just not. It's not done very well.
I didn't think it was that bad.
No, that's pretty
especially because it was intermixed with all the music video stuff. Like when they show you the fight, it's all mixed in, and
I
took that as being edited with the music video. Right. So I give it a pass because it was a choice. Looked like a choice rather than
fair.
Because they're rapping and then fighting and rap. You know, it's intermixed in. So they end up beating up all the grow guys, which they were big guys and they seemed outnumbered, but these kids are doing flips and they're like crazy
like
martial
jump
arts
kicks and all kinds of stuff,
and they take all their stuff, and then I think it fast forwards to where we're introduced to Colin Firth.
So the Colin Farrell,
I'm sorry, yeah. They're not gonna be very different. but Kingsman
there's another one of those coming out.
The King's Man.
That looks kind of good.
That got delayed quite a bit.
It did.
Remember, we saw previews like all last summer, and it's not even.
Yeah. I think Matthew Vaughn may have been involved in that. He's definitely an executive producer for
but
sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like they take a bunch of weed, and then are we introduced to Colin
this
Farrell?
This is where we cut to him and the punk kids that are at the restaurant.
Oh,
and they're like,
you're right.
They're
man,
like going up and making noise.
I love this scene so much.
Trying to order, and Colin Farrell turns around. He's like, hey, step back, wait your turn.
Right.
And these guys are like giving him a hard time. They're pulling out knives.
Yeah, and he's like, well, come on then.
Yeah.
And the guy,
one by one,
him.
He starts, yeah, it's kind of like a.
He's like, oh, wait, you're the coach. And he's like, oh,
after he kicks all their asses.
Yeah, right.
They're like,
but he
wait
doesn't. He never kicks their ass.
Well,
he
hits them and stuff.
He smacks them.
Okay.
But he uses, instead of using his fists.
Potato, potato. I'm just saying.
It's
once he
takes
them, puts them all in their place.
And then so basically
puts
I think
oil in their eyes and stuff. Like,
yeah, I thought it was great. So he's getting some fish and chips.
And he's
of course,
like, he's coaching. He's telling them like, no, what you need to do
is
you
fight with your hands.
Yeah,
that's what you got to do.
Teaching them all these different things.
Right.
And then, they recognize
So he
him.
Gets a phone call from one of the guys. And he was like, you got what? From where? Please tell me it wasn't from here. He was just like,
no, he doesn't know yet.
He doesn't know yet. That's when he gets there,
he just says, hold on, I'll be there. Don't do anything.
And he pulls into the gym. And of course, there's all these dudes are bringing in this weed. And he was like, where?
And we didn't know they won yet. At this
point, I guess that's true. Yeah,
it kind of goes back and forth. But at this point, we see them all. So we know that they beat up the Grow guys.
Right.
And that's where we see the music video.
And he says, where did you get this?
His whole gym is covered in plants.
Yeah. He's like,
these kids that he trains have brought it. They beat up and taken the stuff from Mickey Pearson and then brought it all to his gym.
Right.
And like,
and Mickey and he, Colin Farrell's like, please tell me you didn't steal this from Mickey Pearson. And of course, the one guy's like,
he doesn't know that.
I don't know.
That's later. That's later.
But how does he find? He knows who the weed dealer is. He knows who's the big guy.
He doesn't until the guys are training in the boxing gym. And the guy goes, hey, coach, hey, good news. I found out who it's from. And that's a later
scene.
Is
that what it is?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Right now, he's just like, what did you do? Like, you guys need to. He takes these kids off the street and takes their anger and aggression and channels it into boxing. And so he's training kids that are from hard lives and trying to give them some purpose. And so anyway, these kids are, you know, he explains throughout the movie, like, yeah, they're good kids, but they need guidance. And but these kids are also kind of punks and they're trying to do what they do.
Right.
So he's not very happy, you can tell, with this whole thing. But he's,
oh, is that, does it, does he ask where they,
I don't remember, but
yeah,
he doesn't find out.
He basically tracks down how he got the information.
Yeah.
Like how these kids got the information to go get the weed
after he finds out whose it is.
Right. He figures all that out beforehand.
Who talks to him? Someone tells him that Mickey Pearson's operation was raided, and then the guy,
I think it's on the news.
Okay, well,
because so Charlie Hunnam sees it on the security cam, and then this is where, because they're talking to the one guy who got beat up real bad, and he's just like, I do love this scene too, where he's just like, man, they came out of nowhere, and we didn't even, and he's, the guy has got like a busted lip and his face is all bleeding. And he's just like,
they were good fighters.
He's like, yeah, they were good fighters. And you could tell that McConaughey is livid, but he's not like,
scary.
But he's also looking at his man's face. He's like, yeah, he did get tuned up pretty good.
Yeah.
So he kind of lets him go.
Whoever was, do you remember someone told Farrell about Mickey Pearson's thing getting raided? And then the kid goes, hey, good news, boss, we know who it was. And he says, please tell me it wasn't Mickey Pearson. It wasn't on the news. He talked to someone about it. And then the kid says, I know. And then,
yeah, because they post the video. I feel like he knows ahead of time because he posts the video.
But Colin Farrell doesn't know about Mickey Pearson's grow operations.
I think that he does though because he sees the video. They're posting the video online. It's got like, they're like, oh, it's got like 2 million views already. He's like, take it down. I feel like at that point,
well,
he doesn't
want his kids to incriminate themselves.
But I think he already knows whose weed it was, because Mickey Pearson,
I took it that way too, that
he knew exactly who
Mickey Pearson
was.
A known quantity.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Like,
he already knew, because you know, he shows up, he's like, tell me who gave you the information. And he's like, okay, so they give him the name. He, and then Charlie,
I feel like he's like, his character Colin Farrell's is like
he's like
within that world, but not a part of it.
I feel like he used to be. I mean, think about the stuff he does,
and that,
like,
he knows a lot of these people and he interacts with them,
right?
But he doesn't do that kind of business.
Correct.
And so he knows who they are, he knows a lot of their secrets, but he also doesn't want any part of it.
Correct.
Yeah,
correct. So he goes to the bar. He being Colin Farrell, goes to the bar, meets Charlie Hunnam, and just says, look, I've got your stuff, I'm really sorry, like, my kids can be kind of dopey sometimes. I'll do what I have to do to make amends and make this right.
He's like, I take responsibility,
but don't hurt the kids. Yeah. He's like, I'll take the responsibility. And Hunnam's like, first things first, who gave you the information? He's like, I got you covered.
Yeah.
And he opens the car door, the trunk, and there's Fahuk, like, it tied up. And
this is the guy that came with Dry Eye to the meeting.
To the meeting.
So he's seen him. It's a guy that he has like a little mark under his right eye.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I guess there's the whole thing where, because Charlie Hunnam drops two people off two buildings, and it gets to the point where McConaughey's like, you got to change the way you're doing things. Like, this is getting ridiculous.
And that was another great scene, because the whole thing happens where he goes to visit his lord, one of the lords of the grow operation, and they said, our daughter's gone, and this is the one that was in the tabloids.
Right.
So he sends Charlie Hunnam his best man and his other guy.
I do like that Hunnam's like, I don't want to go. He's like, too bad.
Yeah, you're my best guy.
He was like,
go.
I know, but it's so gross there. He's like, yeah, well, go get
but
her.
This was so Guy Ritchie when he finds all these guys and you know, the way that they're putting these kids in their place to think they're these tough guys or whatever. And then the girl,
you've got this massive black dude whose name is Bunny, which I just think is like, that's perfect. And then you've got another, like, you've got a guy outside,
a couple rough looking goons,
some goony looking dudes, and he comes in and does the whole,
he plays
I'm smarter than you.
Yeah, Charlie Hunnam does a really good job in this role. I like that he plays it. He's mostly calm and collected. He's smart. He's been in this game a long time.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to use brute force to get what he wants.
Right.
He, you know,
uses his brain.
Yeah, exactly. And so he puts these kids in their place that are doing drugs and hanging out with
that,
a girl.
I love that he's like, I know you, I know you, and I know you.
Who's this?
Who are you?
And as soon as they showed this kid's flashback thing,
like,
I mean, that was Chekhov's flashback. Like,
in more ways than
no
one.
Way, there's no way. That's pretty fun. There's no way that won't come around. When you see the kid, that this is what happens is they take the girl, she goes along willingly, and these guys are like, oh, you know, don't go, you can't, whatever. And this one kid charges one of the bad guys, and he moves out of the way and falls off the balcony.
And so, like, all these guys are, you know, this
but
is
the
like,
punk kids from the restaurant, those same punk kids.
Is that the same kids?
I believe so. It's some of them, at least.
Okay.
These punk kids that are part of this little street thug gang or whatever are talking to the guy, the driver, goon outside at the car,
and then the dude falls, and they're all taking pictures with their phones,
selfies, and then they start running in a total Guy Ritchie fashion. When you know the music starts, and the guys are each chasing a different guy, really loved the
scene.
Feel
finally, when the one kid that Hunnam was chasing finds like his other street toughs, he's just like, I'll give you, like, and he's trying to play it diplomatically.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, I will give you
trouble.
This money. Just give me
it's
the
like,
phone.
It's like 5,000 pounds or something.
And he's like, why don't you just give me the
give
me the money. And so finally, like, this Uzi drops out from behind.
This is so great. Yeah.
And he just fires in the air. And of course he's like, just put the phone
down. It's hidden
down.
Under, like, he's got like a leather trench coat kind of a thing. And so he's trying
to play
street
sweeper.
Cool.
That's what they used to call that. Yeah. That was the, in like the Untouchables.
Yeah.
The, Sean Connery had like a shotgun that was like
under the jack.
Under the jack, it's called the street sweeper.
And so the kids are like, how about you leave the money and we keep the phone? You know, and so he pulls out the gun. It's such a cool moment. And they all go running,
right?
Except for the kid, and he's pointing right at him. He's like,
just put the phone down.
The phone down. Yeah.
And he does. And of course, he gets people show up, and then they look up, and there's two of the goons are like shaking the one guy.
It's just one guy.
Is it one guy
him,
holding
him?
And of course, the phone drops.
Phone falls into Charlie Hunnam's hand.
Right.
And then you have the big black guys chasing a kid on a bike who's like, you can't get me. And you see their Mercedes go around a corner.
It's a door.
And so they park in front and flip him.
I do like where the guy sits down. He's like, whew. That was tough.
But that's one of those things about the Guy Ritchie movies that you love is just those chases and the, you know, and I love the idea of them all splitting up and having to chase down a different
kid. I also think that a chase like that doesn't work when you like in the U.S. I feel like the architecture of like Britain lends itself really well to like,
I can see that
alleys cutting through alleys to other streets.
It's just not as busy, at least in this part. Like as you know, a lot of the U.S. is so densely populated and buildings everywhere.
Right.
So I like
it's kind of like open area and like under bridges and all kinds of different stuff that you could run.
Yeah. So he gets all the things back. It's a fun scene.
We do see the head of that kid earlier when Charlie Hunnam is giving and we're just like, who the hell is that? I'm like, well, it's a Guy Ritchie movie. We'll figure it out at some point.
Well, it's great because Hugh Grant's like, do you have any steaks? Like, so random. He's like, yeah. And so he goes and gets
them.
He's
like, I got a Wagyu.
Yeah. And he sees the steaks are next to a head. And
right.
So Hugh Grant's done his research and he knows.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is like, we're everything that we're being told in this movie, Hugh Grant is telling Charlie Hunnam. Like, he has all this information. He's got the pictures. And he's like, where'd you get these? And apparently Hugh Grant has been following him from the Jump Street. And so everything we know, everything we're finding out, Hugh Grant already knows. Mm-hmm. And that's how we're getting the story. So we get the Fahuk scene. And of course, they're doing what they need to do. And then Fahuk jumps off of a thing and then lands in front of a train.
He tricks him into thinking like, oh, I can't breathe. I have asthma. And then they untie him and he runs.
He jumps. And I do like they're both just like, God. Damn
such
it.
A funny moment, and again, such a Guy Ritchie thing. Like, you know,
right.
to have him run away. Oh, he's escaped and right into the train
tracks.
And you see like blood go out from
everywhere.
The side
which I thought was great. Like, it was very funny. So we cut back. We figure out that Fahuk worked for Dry Eye.
Well, and we know. Yeah, that's the only thing. They didn't get anything out of him, but they know he's Dry Eye's
right
hand man.
Right. So this is where McConaughey and Charlie Hunnam go see like the top, like dry eyes boss, mm-hmm. which I thought was another very good scene where they sit down and they're having it. And then all of a sudden you hear like a gurgle mm-hmm. and like the guy's like, oh, who's in
it? These scenes though remind you that Guy Ritchie can really write dialogue.
Yeah.
When you talk about all those early work, a lot of it was, I mean, it's very like they don't move around to a ton of locations. It's people talking, you know, when you see Jason Statham and the other guys in this movie talking about, you know, just the way this world operates. And they're talking about the Pikeys and they're talking about, you know, Bricktop or whatever the guy, you know, they're just talking about this world. And it's like, wow, he can craft a really interesting world and characters that you like to, they're funny and entertaining and they're intimidating, like everything you want in a gangster type movie. And so this scene reminded me of how suave writing could be with a guy that like has, you know, has all the holding all the cards, where, you know, McConaughey is just explaining beat by beat like everything this guy.
And I can see what Tom was saying about Tarantino light, I guess. Like there's a lot of that here where he's not trying, but he's doing things in the vein. And I don't really know if he's trying to do them in the vein of Tarantino,
especially
but that's just,
early Tarantino.
Yeah, but that's just kind of what it is now.
But I mean,
like Tarantino has put like a trademark on that.
Tarantino, yeah. Kevin Smith, you know, Guy Ritchie in these old ones and in this, Linklater. Yeah. You know, there's some people that just, they really know how to write characters and could write interesting dialogue to where you feel like, wow, that's what this character would be saying. It doesn't feel like an actor acting. It feels like a gangster or whatever kind of character. But yeah, I love this whole thing. And again, they keep doing that flashback thing where like they show the chef making his tea in this place, and they don't really go back to it until McConaughey's, well, until this guy starts projectile vomiting
everywhere.
And you see that he got to the chef.
Right. And he said, like, basically says, you either get your guy and like, if you didn't do it, if you didn't send him after me, like he did it under your nose. So you need to get your organization in check. And he's like, if I can get to you
in your house,
in your kitchen, I can get to you anywhere.
You got problems.
And I like where he's like, take two of these tablets. If you don't, you're going to brains out.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I thought it was a nice little.
Just take two of these fizzy biscuits.
Yeah. If not, you're going to pretty much poop yourself to death in the next hour.
Yeah. He said you'll be good in an hour or two. Just enough time to reflect on your actions.
Right. So this is where we get the meeting between Dry Eye and the dragon. I don't know if that's really his, but I feel like old dragon.
No,
wasn't
like
that
George,
like,
right?
Old. Yeah, but wasn't he called like the old dragon? Or
I don't think so. They refer to some of these guys as dragons, but I think they really call them like old George.
Okay,
right.
Where he talks to
Lord George.
Sorry. Lord George. Okay, where he talks to Dry Eye, and he was just like, "Did you do that?" And he was like, "I mean, yeah, like,
yeah,
I did." And he's like, "It's time for you to go." And this is where we cut back. We see that the main culprit behind all of this is Matthew.
Yeah,
Matthew is doing what he can. Matthew knows the location, which he gave to Henry Goulding.
Yeah, Henry Goulding is
Dry Eye
at this point.
No, okay. The guy from Crazy Rich Asians.
No, I know Goulding. Who he is. Okay.
They're at the soccer game, and they're both talking Mandarin.
And this is shown through Hugh Grant's character to Charlie Hunnam, which
he's
again
like,
is great.
It.
He's like, so I used my long range lens and I zoomed in on them, and I had someone translate it.
Right.
He puts down two scripts.
He's
and
like,
they're acting out the. It's so funny.
And I do like where the translation isn't totally right.
Yeah. it's that creative, that storytelling dynamic of like interrupting. We're watching the story be told, but yet you're hearing the narrators in the background like, what does that mean? And they cut back to them. It's just a clever, it keeps things entertaining, right?
It does,
like in a lot of movies where you're just seeing a flashback, that can be boring or uninteresting.
Yeah.
But the way Guy Ritchie does it here with the narrators and jumping back and forth and the comedy injected, it really keeps things moving to where I thought this was just a fun watch from beginning to end.
Yeah, I agree.
It was interesting, and I was also like kept guessing how it was going to happen and turn out, but also I was just thoroughly entertained. Like when I go to the theater for a couple hours, you want to be entertained.
Yeah.
And this is a movie where you can sit back and have fun and see some good action.
Unless you're Tom.
Well, asterisk. So I like this where, and then so you like, you hear in the background, like the Cantonese or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you
Mandarin.
Hear,
Mandarin.
It was a Mandarin. Yeah. Okay. And then you hear, cause they went back and forth. They're like, I don't know what it, like they were guessing what the languages were, but then you hear them on top narrating with their mouths moving. And
so basically we find out that Matthew has set this whole thing up and the
surprise.
Deal. Yeah. Shocking.
Yeah.
The deal was that he wanted to drive down the price.
Yeah.
Of the weed market. And so basically when that raid happened, that means that weed market, that weed supply was compromised, and McConaughey has to like cut ties with that lord. And the guy's like, man, that $100 million a year was, or that million a year was pretty sweet. And he's like, well, you know, we'll figure something out.
Matthew, I mean, he's a numbers guy. So he says, so that means you're going to cease this production. You'll have this much, 25% for, you're still going to have to pay the staff. And
right.
He calculates it all out and he ends up saying, so I value, you know, $400 million was a good valuation in the beginning, but now it's minus like all this.
200 or like 135.
Yeah, he's
or
like,
something.
Take off 178 million, or it is 178 million because
right.
of all these factors.
Right.
And
we should say that in this process, so we now this is where we go back to the scene, the beginning of the movie, where they're going to he's going to a meeting, he's sitting down, and then we get the exact same scene in the very beginning, but this time it turns out that Charlie Hunnam is the one that fired the shot and killed the guy who was going to kill Matthew McConaughey. Yeah. So they both take off, they're tearing because they know that his wife is now in trouble, and we find out that his wife on the other end of the phone, Dry Eye, was there with two guys, and he's like, look, I'm not gonna hurt you, but you're gonna come with me, you're gonna do this.
And she was smart, where before she hangs up, she's like, oh hey, Dry Eye, and she hangs up
right,
the phone
hangs
discreetly
up the phone.
But kind of listening to
yeah
this.
And earlier in the movie, Matthew gave Mickey Pearson's like a paperweight, and it was like this little two-shot, you know, .22 revolver.
It's a baby. It's like
a tiny gun.
A boot gun. Like
right.
A, you know,
yes,
you hide
exactly
it in your
right.
sock.
Yeah, but it was supposed to be used as a paperweight. And he was like, what do I need a paperweight for?
Because
I love the line where she says, well, anything's a paperweight.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah.
I did like that line a lot.
Like in the UK, guns are illegal.
Totally illegal.
So it's great that like he gave him this gift. This is gold gun with all these gold.
I did like how, like, knowing that they're illegal, like, how the criminals were like, whoa, not a gun.
Yeah, paperweight.
I know. They were just like,
that
no,
you,
sir.
Like, there ain't no coming back from having a gun.
Right.
Yeah. Even the other's like, no, thank you.
Yeah. So it's in her office, and luckily she has it.
Right.
Because Dry Eye and his thugs.
So they make a move, and of course she pulls the...
And she's so badass, though, where she pulls this little gun, and you're like, okay, anyone that knows about guns and calibers, like, that's a very small bullet. Like, you shoot him in the arm or that, whatever. Like, you're not going to...
And she doesn't say anything about shit. She's
like,
I'm going to
like
put one right between your eyes.
Yeah, she has two shots. And
yeah.
She's like, yeah, she says, this is what I'm going to do. This is how it's going to go down. You better stay away. Each goon goes at her. One, two.
Pop, pop. And right. I do like the first goon. Initially, I thought that the caliber was so small
it didn't do anything. But it's in his brain.
And then he falls over.
Takes the blood with his finger off his forehead and falls back.
I do like that. And then Henry Goulding is like, all right. Like, well, I'll go. And then the other guy moves and she shoots him in the head. And he was like, those are your two shots.
Out, yeah.
And then he honestly, this is where he takes it a step way too far.
Oh, yeah.
Is when he's going to rape her.
He's a bad dude.
And then she's like, you know, I thought she was starting to disassociate. Like, she was just kind of blanking out. And then she says, oh, hi, honey.
Yeah.
And like the camera cuts
and blows Dry Eye away. Just like in the flashback,
yeah,
where he blows him away, he holds his gun the same way.
Yep.
He does the gangster, the killing the same badass way that they, you know, so he actually ends up doing it in a different spot. But she's like bent over the table, and he has
intentions.
Yeah.
And McConaughey,
I think he got there in time, though, because you see him, he's like spreads her legs and he's like trying
he
to unbuckle
his
belt.
His pants
but,
aren't off yet.
But yeah, so
and then McConaughey
luckily
shoots him in the face.
But, yeah.
And I do like where then we cut back to Hugh Grant, and he's like, oh, you didn't know that old George was dead. And then they cut back to the scene between old George and
Hugh Grant wasn't there, so Charlie Hunnam's like, so you're making all this up of this is how it's happened,
right?
And he's like, well, there's only certain ways, like, you know, you got to put some flourish for Hollywood, but so we don't really know if that went down that way, I guess,
right?
Because this
I
is,
think Charlie Hunnam knows how it went down,
yeah, but we're seeing Hugh Grant's
flashback.
So, you know, there may be some embellishment there, but it's a good scene in any event. But
we find out that that Dry Eye ends up putting a hit on old George.
Well, and we didn't see it, but it's actually end of their meeting.
Right,
it's the
right.
scene we didn't see.
Right.
But another general in Lord George's, like, he tells the general to do something, maybe with Henry
Golding.
He's
like, take him out,
and then he turns away and
shoots
walks
old George.
And, yeah.
So now. Here we are, like, we find out that Matthew's plan was to put Dry Eye in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have this meeting. This is the scene where they get the breakdown between like Matthew and McConaughey. which yeah. I, Matthew and Mickey.
Matthew and Mickey.
Yeah, that's fair. That's dumb. where they basically, he tries to lowball him, and he was like, nope, I have all of the information. We're going to put you into this. Like, he moves.
This is another, the writing is so good, and it's another badass moment from McConaughey. He was like, this is how it's going to work. So I know. Oh, well, first of all,
they
go moves,
and they move it. And he's yeah. like, when I, okay, so he says a phrase that probably isn't the most PC. Like, I don't think the phrase that they keep using, the Chinaman phrase, I don't know if that's PC or
yeah,
not.
That's
I don't
not
think that it is.
Supposed to be a thing.
No, but
it's
these are
thing,
also
right?
like British mobsters. They're right. not good They're, people. So they.
But, so, like, but. They both keep using that phrase.
Well, Hugh Grant yeah. says that he's a yellow crazy.
He does
I mean,
say that.
I mean,
yeah, that's true.
These are not good people. So there's a difference when you are saying it like someone's just saying a bunch of racist crap yeah. in real life, but these are also mobsters. Like, so also killing people, selling illegal drugs, like all these are bad things, right?
Totally.
So like it's a world where you can understand where the characters are speaking.
Yeah, I guess I feel like they should have just kept that out of, like, if you're making McConaughey the quote unquote good guy, like, you keep that out of his mouth. If that makes sense.
I didn't notice that specific instance, but again, I guess they're just all kind of.
Sure. So basically criminals. He says, he's like, this is your man. He's like, nope, not my, I
well,
don't know what's going on.
The funny thing is Matthew plays it so cool because he's like, this guy, you know, or Dries has been trying to gun in on my operation.
Right.
And he's like, I don't know who that is.
And they walk outside. They shows him the, he shows him the tape from the, yeah. the soccer match.
He's like, oh, you thought this was someone else?
Right,
you just
right.
mistook him?
He's like, and here's the deal.
And he says, it's just business, Matthew. And it's
I
like,
know.
Yeah.
I was like very Godfather-esque because I do think they use a line from The Godfather at some point. I don't remember, but.
But I like that he's like, I can, I get it. I get the business. I can turn an
then
eye
he came
to
at my
big
wife.
Robbery, all this. But yeah, he laid hands on my wife.
Right.
And so he lays out the law. He said,
so he says, the business is not for sale. You owe me $270 million.
Well, he turns his number around on him though, because yeah. he says, so you've already told me that the business is devalued this much. That's fine. Now you pay me that.
Right. And,
keep it.
And
yeah.
you owe me 10 pounds of flesh.
Oh, 1 pound of flesh.
A pound. Yeah. And he's like, wherever you get it yeah. from, that's up to you. But if you can't, he's like, I'm going to put you in that cooler, in that freezer, and you've got about an hour
yeah.
to get it to before you shut down completely. And if you don't do it, I got Bunny here who's going to do it for you.
Yeah.
And he was just, they put him in the cooler. Great. And he's dressed for, you know, he's dressed for the occasion.
Yeah.
You're not.
It's such a, the way the character's written is so cool because McConaughey is not asking him. He tells him how it's going to go down. And he's got it all laid out. And just this glorious, badass mobster fashion. You know, like he's
right.
telling him how it's going to be. And Matthew can't say, you know, get a word in edgewise. He's just like,
he's got him beat. Like, that's the thing is, like, McConaughey spent his entire life in this world where it feels like Matthew is in the world, but not like in the world.
Well, McConaughey is smart. He got a scholarship to Oxford. So, like, even though he didn't come from money, he's still smart. And from the beginning of the thing, they say, like, how they're always trying to outdo each other in
right.
their, you know, sophisticated fashions. But, you know, McConaughey, yes, is viewed as this kind of street level hustler, but he's a smart guy.
Yeah.
He was able to get in. So I think when he lays out all these plans and everything, it's true to the character.
Right.
And so, yes, he's this badass mobster, not to say mobster, you know what I mean? This badass criminal, but also he's smart. I mean, he invented an operation,
yeah.
which no one in the UK has ever been able to do. They haven't thought of
right.
this creative way to.
We should also say that while all this is going on, Colin Farrell kind of says, he's like, I'll do what you need me to do till my debt is paid. And Charlie Hunnam's like, I got one thing and then we're good.
Well, cause he thought he was out. And then Charlie Hunnam
right.
needs one more favor.
Two favors. First, they kidnap the newspaper guy.
Hmm.
And apparently they put him on, they black mirror it.
This is Black Mirror.
The
yeah.
first episode of Black Mirror
yeah.
where they videotape him, I guess, screwing a pig.
You guess?
And I can only assume.
Pretty clear.
And I thought that the lines between Farrell and Hunnam were hilarious.
You might want a warm drink and make you feel like.
He's like, once you unsee it, you can't. He's like, no, it's.
Oh, between him and Hunnam. Yeah.
yeah.
He's like, I thought it was funny how nonchalantly Farrell kept talking to Big Dave,
yeah.
who's, you know, the newspaper guy.
Right.
I thought how he's like, good morning, your clothes are all folded and got you a coffee, and he's been all nice to him and stuff.
He's like,
he's like,
just
you're
push
gonna watch
the,
this
push the space
and,
bar.
Yeah.
And that story about Mickey Pearson is gonna go away.
Yeah.
So and then he shows it to Hunnam and they're just like, oof.
Yeah.
Like,
that banter
once,
is
once
good,
you
yes.
once you when you can't unsee that, he's like, no, it's gonna yeah. stick with you for
that's
a while.
That's the Richie humor, that banter that he's really good at doing.
Yeah.
And I've missed. Yeah.
So now
I just wish it had been something else because, like you said, with Black Mirror, like that's all you. It's like
as soon as they did
I
was
British
like, "That's a bold."
And,
right?
I mean, they did the same.
I feel like that's the most. I don't want to say famous, but that's like the most.
There's no way that they did not see Black Mirror.
That's
you know
especially,
what I mean?
Like, especially that episode.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like that's I totally get it. Where I'm like,
and,
that's
and there's
so
also
similar.
No way that there's no one who worked on this movie
that has, yeah.
who has been like, yeah, no,
you know, they did that yeah. In the first episode.
Yeah. Now, I mean, to their credit, I mean, it is different, but I mean, but the same animal,
it's
and
the same premise.
Sex. I mean,
yeah, it's a videotape.
They
that,
drugged
you know.
Him, and I guess he got all crazy and just did it on his own volition, right? And so
did it, the president in Black Mirror.
But
no,
he was
blackmailed into doing it.
And
oh,
he chose
oh, sure,
to do
sure,
it. What
sure,
I mean
yeah,
is the feeling
okay.
I was drugged up and
just
in
did
a
it.
Craze. Yeah, okay. So I mean, it is a little different, but the fact that it's like something so specific yeah. as sex with a pig,
right?
And especially since it's British, I still think like that's just so specific.
No, I agree.
But
then we've got yeah. so then
and I like that the video clip had a play button like on yeah. a pig's butt like yeah. it just it was funny just the visual of that and how the pig's kind of like animated like
yeah.
a gif you know
yeah so Hugh Grant says he's like you got 72 hours and I'll come back and you'll give my money or I give everything. He's like I've got things everywhere so you're good to go.
Well, he says he's got insurance policy so
right.
he can't take me out or it's all gonna
get released anyway.
So that is the second favor.
Yeah, the second favor is that Colin Farrell's group of dudes get all the second stuff, get all the insurance policies. And I do like that. Let's see. They
so
sit down
at
the meeting and basically we
Hugh
find
Grant's
out
back for his money.
Right.
And Colin Farrell pulls out the briefcase, which is the insurance policy.
Right. And they stuff him in that.
He's like,
they
yeah.
stuff him in the other thing. So while all of that is going on, this is where, McConaughey is attacked by the Russians. And we find out that,
oh yeah. All simultaneously.
Yes.
You have, yeah.
All this is going on. So we find out that the kid that jumped off that bridge, jumped off the, not the bridge, but the ceiling.
Patio.
Yeah, the patio,
yeah.
was the son of like a top
Russian
ranking
mobster.
Russian mobster.
Ex-KGB. Like, yeah. yeah. And so they show earlier when he dies and they're telling the story of how the kid fell off. Maybe it's McConaughey. He's like, Hunnam's like, it's some kid, whatever. And he's like, yeah, but some kid, these rich kids have parents that are important
right.
all this. You see the KGB guy and he looks like someone from John Wick, like you would not mess
yeah,
with, right?
Right.
And so, and when it just moved off that, I'm like, well, clearly that's coming back.
Yeah.
And so now,
so this is where Hugh Grant says, I know who's the guy behind all this. And I was like, they keep cutting back to Colin Farrell. I was like, man, don't make it look like that Colin Farrell has
I know
set
when
this
they're cutting back and
up,
forth I'm like, oh, don't tell me Colin
yeah,
Farrell's a behind
a
the scenes
bag.
Like yeah, but it isn't. They're showing him because he's walking away, but as he walks away
yeah,
you see two Russian
well he
mobsters.
Even says, he's like, three strikes, I'm out, good luck to you, we'll see you later.
Yeah.
And then the Russian mobster goes to kill Charlie Hunnam. Yeah,
two of them.
Yeah,
there's two
and then,
creeping
and
around
then,
his property with guns.
Colin Farrell takes them both out. And he looks at him and he was like, and he holds up four and he was
yeah.
like, I'm out.
Yeah. Because he's like, that makes four without saying anything. The look on his face and the fingers. Yeah. It's great. So he ends up saving them at this point. Hugh Grant's out and he's like, yeah, they got all this information from me. So he took all the information.
Right. He took it.
He thought he'd get double dip.
Right. That's
just
what he was trying
to do. Double bubble. He
yeah.
was going
to
sell it to Big Dave and, or to McConaughey.
Right.
And to the Russian guy.
Right.
So he was going to cash in
and
twice.
And he bolts. Like he, like Hugh Grant
is running
gone.
Over a hedge. And
yeah.
yeah.
Which I also thought was like, was that can't be a shot at Edgar Wright.
I don't think so.
But I mean, like, that's what Sean does. Sean's jumping over hedges in Shaun of the Dead.
I think
I
it was
know,
just a
jump
fun.
Over hedges in movies.
I don't think so, but
did it one time.
yeah. Ferris Bueller.
I think it was just funny.
House
that
party.
They cut to where Hugh Grant was standing, and Hugh Grant knows all this, and he doesn't have any insurance policy, so they can just kill him at this point.
Right.
And so Hunnam says, stay there. He deals with whatever the whole Russian situation. He looks back to the same shot, and it's empty.
Right.
And then just funny cut to him jumping over
the thing. Should say that like Hunnam set all of this up. He knew that Hugh Grant was involved.
Yeah.
So like when he gets him in the house, he was like, yeah, of course I know that you like to drink, so I kept you I got you
yeah.
just drunk enough. I knew that you liked the barbecue to keep your feet warm, which is where they were when they made the steak. I gave you the pricey steak. We didn't know where your extra insurance policy was, so when you went inside to go pee,
and I told you to take your shoes off,
and
tracking device.
I put a tracking device in your shoe, and I found everything. Yeah. So they, you know, it's the double cross.
Yes.
So finally, we cut to Hugh Grant talking to an exec at Miramax in the UK
with a with a Man from Uncle poster with the real actors in it. So I'm like, if he's pitching this to a director, there's Man from Uncle. How is that? It would have been a perfect cameo for Guy Ritchie. Why didn't he just do it?
I agree.
Because that makes sense. On the nose, and we weren't even right. But I was like, oh, is it really Guy Ritchie? But it wasn't.
But it's also like Weinstein wasn't even, if it was supposed to be a Weinstein analog, he wasn't even part of Miramax at that point. He'd have been with the Weinstein company. Miramax, well, he sold Miramax.
Yeah, but he was still a scumbag during Miramax.
But Miramax wasn't a Harvey.
He's saying that
Harvey Weinstein was not involved with
wouldn't
Miramax.
Wouldn't have worked at Miramax at this
he
point.
He wasn't there when they made The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Like, he had moved on
he was
to
already
the Weinstein.
Oh, right. He wasn't with Miramax, but, I mean, he still starts.
If we're saying,
like, he was
still
in charge of Miramax, so it's...
No, he wasn't.
Yeah.
He was at one point, but not
when
this...
Yeah, that's
what
I'm saying. Like, but he's still associate. When you see Miramax, the name... I mean, this is a movie, and it's, you know, I think that if he's trying to make an analog, you see Miramax and you see scummy director. I mean, you're just going to connect the dots. It's not a biography. You know what
I'm
saying?
No, I know, but like, I just thought it was a weird analog to, I mean, for a
but
movie.
But it's also weird to have Man from U.N.C.L.E. and not have Guy Ritchie. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I agree.
There are lots of weird things in this. So, like, yeah, I don't think we can one for one go, this time doesn't match
right,
up because
right,
what
right.
the hell is this Guy Ritchie poster doing in a Guy Ritchie movie? Like, that makes no sense.
So, yeah, so then he thinks he's got the, he's like, you tell me what you got, and I'll, here's the script. And he gets in the cab and he's like, all right,
Uber
we're going
to
go to, no, it was a cab.
Was, okay.
Yeah,
whatever,
and he's like, we're going to go to the airport. And of course, the rear view mirror tilts down and it's Matthew McConaughey.
That's Hunnam.
Oh, was it Hunnam? Mm-hmm. I thought it was McConaughey.
No.
Okay. No. But either way, and that's kind of how the movie ends. Like, that's the button on it. We find out that McConaughey doesn't sell for now. Like, he keeps the property, and he and his wife are. I do love the scene. I don't know. I thought it was so cool because, like, earlier in the movie, he and his wife have a moment. He was like, "You got time?" And she was like, "No, like, get out of here."
Yeah.
And he was like, "Okay." And he's like,
"I'm at
damn."
Work, yeah.
So he walks away, and of course, we see him sitting in a hotel room, and she opens the door, and they kind of have a go between. And then she says, he's like, you got time now? And he was like, yeah, I got some time.
Yeah.
And like closes the door. And I but yeah, like that's kind of how it ends. I thought this was fantastic.
I loved it.
And of course,
I did
know,
too.
Like,
I feel like I like the idea of this movie way better than I like
the actual
movie.
Do you like the idea of any of his movies? Like,
I mean, just like the crime world and comedy and, but.
I wonder what doesn't do it for you.
I don't know.
Yeah,
nothing.
Just yeah.
I don't know.
Do you think it? I mean, I'm just trying to like. But you're a Tarantino guy, right?
Oh yeah.
Do you think
like
it's
the British Tarantino kind of?
He is kind of the British Tarantino
I mean,
in a way.
The same, it's like in that category of movie. Like,
yeah. So I was wonder if it's like because I don't know. Maybe I'm just guessing. Well,
sometimes
but
you
I'm
just
thinking maybe it's just because it's
just doesn't
it feels
like the
Tarantino
cut of his jib,
light. You know, like
yeah,
it's not
I don't
the
know.
Original.
I just all but right. like I've. None of it's ever worked for me. I like Man from U.N.C.L.E. okay. Like I would
which
never.
Is like totally is feels like a non Guy Ritchie movie,
yeah.
right? Like Man from U.N.C.L.E. is,
yeah.
I'm not saying there aren't any elements, but
it's not
a spy,
what
whatever. It's not
of,
criminal under,
yeah.
yeah.
And
so,
I like the first 40 minutes
yeah,
of Sherlock.
I love that first one.
But I think it's safe to say if you are a Guy Ritchie fan, and especially if you love Lock, Stock and Snatch and maybe the whatever the other one is. What's the other one called? I always
rock
forget.
And roll.
Rock yeah,
and
roll. Rock and roll, and not Smoking Aces.
Yeah, I mean, if you like those, movies,
if you like those, this
yeah.
is like a perfect shoe-in, like double feature or 3-pack Blu-ray or whatever. You know, I mean, this pairs well with those.
It does, yeah.
And
I agree.
I'm like, seriously, this is the Guy Ritchie. Please make original crime, you know, street level movies with these kind of like. This is what you were made famous for. This is what you excel at. I mean, I know
he
you got to make a
I was
paycheck,
thinking,
but
he wouldn't be bad for like a Green Arrow movie.
Yeah.
I could see that working.
Yeah, he could. But, yeah. like, yeah, please, just, you know, give us more original stuff like this. It's really fun, really well written, great characters. I mean, this is what I expected. When I left, I was happy. Like,
yeah.
It looked like a return to form, but you just never know.
You never know.
And one of those things when the credits roll, you're like, yep, that was it.
Uh-huh.
If I had a picture in my mind of kind of what to expect, it did not disappoint.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Awesome. Well, I guess let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at KevinRBracket.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. Don't forget, wherever you get your podcast, to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And, of course, check out our Patreon at Patreon.com/Real Spoilers, where for $5 you get all sorts of bonus content.
And I just wanted to add in, this movie had a $22.1 million budget.
22.1?
But that's nothing. Yeah. This had a ton of people.
Yeah, that's
it was a great looking movie. 22.1.
I figured watching this movie that they probably were all working for scale just
because
they liked the idea of it.
Right.
And I also think that the way the movie's constructed, it doesn't feel this way, but I bet you a lot of them they didn't need for very long.
Oh, I think you're probably right.
True, yeah, because it cuts back and forth like Hugh Grant.
Right. Henry Golding?
Golding
probably was there for a day.
Yeah, you can film all that stuff in a couple weeks or whatever.
Yeah, Hugh Grant probably, like, I mean, honestly, most, like, 90% of his scenes take place in one room. Yeah.
Right, right.
You know, so it's like it doesn't feel that way, but
you're probably right.
When you stop and map it out, you're like, oh, yeah, I bet you really, you know, they probably didn't need any of them for more than a few weeks.
Right.
That's
true.
Great, though. So $22.1 million budget, it made $11 million domestic and $22.5 overseas.
So they made their budget.
So in opening week, they've already made it back. I mean, it's about 1.5 to 2 times, you know, to break even.
He's not going to be making that Aladdin money on this one. But
no. Well, clearly not. But
they clearly never meant to.
Yeah, no,
but
right,
keeping
that
budget low, that was a great move. And
it
was a great looking movie with a great cast. So good for them.
Big win.
So anyway, that's it for this one. No idea what we're doing next
week.
Either
Rhythm Section or Gretel and Hansel are the two big ones.
Okay, well, we shall see.
Gretel and Hansel?
That's what it says.
Greta.
Gretel. Is it Greta?
No, it's Gretel.
No, it is Gretel.
They reversed it, though? It's Gretel
and
Hansel?
Yeah, they flipped it. Yeah.
Ooh, I hope there's some sleepy cover music in it. That's very creative.
They're very edgy.
Yeah.
So,
is it by... Grimm's Fairy Tales? Is it by like
One Can Only Hope?
Bob Grimm. It's the edgy version of the.
Now it's starting to sound more like a Fractured Fairy Tale.
It does, right.
Love those.
So anyway, that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time, Mickey makes it to the fourth round.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.